This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to episode 205 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast. Let's obsess about movies and shit. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast where we count down movies from 10 to 1, sometimes TV shows, in order of awesomeness so you don't have to. And today, Wayne, what are we doing for episode 205?
Top 10, last 10. What?
Yeah, and that is basically where we review 10 films we've recently seen but not spoken about on the show, from worst to best, to both warn you off and recommend some stuff that you should be watching.
Exactly. If you're a casual listener who's just happened upon the show, this show is about saying, here's some shit we saw. Some of it's new, some of it's old, some of it's stuff we wanted to get to. If you ever wondered about it, here's the skinny. Yeah,
there's no link, there's no thematic connection between other than the fact that we've watched these films. So it's really just our way of mini reviewing a whole bunch of films that we don't get around to in due course of the regular show.
That's right.
Even though this is a regular show, because that makes no sense. But anyway, yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
That is it. Wayne, I've been away skiing. How's your life been in the interim?
Well, I'll tell you, there's been no fucking skiing going on over here. But more importantly, the top 10 last 10 show is usually an easy show because you're like, I'll just pick up all these shows that I fucking saw over the last, 3 months or whatever.
And I'm in a movie watching challenge, so I had no problem.
Paul has seen 1,000 movies like today. So,
quite, but yes, close.
And I was like, yeah, I'm putting the list together. Oh, shit, we talked about that one. Oh, shit, we talked about that one. And I fucking, oh, Jesus, I haven't got enough films to fill up an entire 10. So I'm like, sister's asshole. So I just like fucking last three days I've been binge watching movies. Because even if you watch another 10, they might not be good enough to be or interesting enough
to talk about on the show.
Exactly. So you wasted like fucking days, right? So yesterday I watched 4 movies.
Wow. Right? Maybe you're part of the movie watching challenge.
Dude, first of all, who said that they watched 6?
Daniel from the IMDb Journey podcast, who I am up against head to head in terms of this competition, watched 6 in a day.
6, Dan. 6? You watched 6 motherfucking movies? Is that what you did, man? Because I tried to watch 4 and I almost went insane.
Here's what Wayne really thinks.
Bitch, please. Man, after the 4th one, I was like, well, you know what? I'm doing a disservice to this 4th movie by making it the 4th movie I've seen. But don't get me wrong.
I get it.
I had some good shit going on.
I watched a lot of movies in a lot of days in my travels. Haven't got around to putting them up on Letterboxd just yet. So
let me ask you, I got a question about your movie watching habits, right? Are you fitting these in by busting it out on your phone and then you continue on your TV?
I would say a good iPad. 50% of the films I watch are on my iPad.
Oh, that makes sense. See, in my head, you got to sit down, get some popcorn and a blowjob and just, just...
Not necessarily that order.
All right, cool.
Yeah. Nice. So there it is. Well, look, before we go any further, we need to give our plug to the Podcast Republic app.
Oh, yes. The Podcast Republic app is a what?
Robust app.
And good ass.
And good ass app that allows you to listen to, on your Android device, this show and indeed any other show of your like. So big thanks to Nay and the team at Podcast Republic featuring us on the website. And we are more than happy to feature them in return.
If you're on Android, among all the pop-ups, try and find the Podcast Republic app in your app store.
Ooh, step. Okay. Well, look. What we would normally do at this point is get a little bit of listener feedback on last step, but actually, we really need to consolidate a whole bunch of stuff we missed in. You know, it'd be nice if I had a sound drop for results. I couldn't think of one off the top of my head. If you are listening to the show and you can think of a good sort of results/score-based sound drop.
Something short, people. Very fucking short, like Paul and his fucking 8-minute long bullshit. Just fucking like a beat or something. Something like, or saying whatever.
Yeah, I don't know, something or other. If you got an idea, please send it through to us so I can make it into a sound drop and then Wayne will be...
more shit to his stupid fucking soundboard. All right, yes, absolutely.
Ignore Wayne and his ridiculously negative ways. Let's go all the way back, first of all, to episode 202, where I forgot to do this last time we recorded. It was the top 10 Academy Award winning performances. Mm. Now, remembering you are 2-1 up in the year at this particular point, which seems ridiculous at the start of March, but we're about to clarify some of that.
No shit.
With 18 votes, you came in and I spanked you soundly with 29 votes there. Oof. And of course, this is when you refused to acknowledge Marlon Brando's greatness. That really did hurt you, I doth believe.
Stella.
So it makes it 2-2. Then, of course, we had the big episode versus the IMDb Journey podcast. The aforementioned Daniel and Dean from the IMDb Journey podcast. It was a top 10 list of best picture winners. Now, as mentioned, I was away skiing.
Here it comes, folks.
I was away skiing and I left in the morning to have a look at the votes and, we're winning by 5, 6 or so. It's, we're going okay. And I'm like, okay, our listeners have come through for us. The home ground advantage is weak because they had a very good list. I want to first acknowledge.
They usually do for us.
Yes. And came back from that day of skiing intact. had my shower and my first beer of the day, sitting down at the bar, pull up my phone, have a look. And I'm like, we're down by 10? What the fuck has happened? I happened to glance at the numbers of members in our Facebook community, which jumped by 8%, give or take, from 258 to 278.
I remember this day very well. I had a whole bunch of requests for people to join the community.
Mm-hmm. Did you look at their last names at all?
I did. I screened every single one of you. All right,
and as real people. We are saying real people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We don't want no damn click farm people. That's doing, right. So I look at them, and I know they're legit, but I also know that they are plants from the opposition. That's right. I understand that. And you know what? Fucking did it anyway.
I know you did.
Because word to Big Bird, it's another interaction. It's another fucking person. They might leave immediately, but you know what? They might
Which
not
at least
too.
A couple have.
Dude, they're going to leave. Okay, it's fine. It's fine. But maybe they find you.
Effectively
maybe
now.
Maybe they find me. Maybe
that
they
same
find you
8%, you could almost argue that the Hendersons and the Jeffreys of the world now have a controlling interest in the show. Based on their presence in the Facebook listener community.
I think I can win you guys over. I think you can. I think if you just keep listening and just get on board, I think you're going to be on my team soon.
All of which is... We've never had this many votes. Like 25% more votes than we've ever had in the Facebook listener community.
It's okay.
Which tells you that went very hard. Oh, no collusion.
No collusion.
The IMDb Journey podcast have defeated us. And of course, it's a very sad moment. And I think it's appropriate to commemorate it in song.
What the fuck?
43 votes.
Oh, Jesus.
The IMDb Journey podcast, which includes both Daniel and Dean voting for themselves, to a lazy 36 votes for us.
Uh-huh.
There was 36 of our loyal listeners who just fought right to the wire
all them people.
For us. It's a sad day.
That's right.
Our streak is over. The visitors have won. Dubious tactics aside, I mean, Donald Trump is the president.
Yeah. Exactly.
So if he can get to be president in the most
I think
powerful
that's how it runs now.
Human in the Western world, then maybe we shouldn't look down our noses on the IMDb Journey podcast doing whatever they had to do to win this particular
vote. I admire the tenacity and the people who are new on board. You're going to love me. You're going to love me. So don't even worry about it, kids.
Well, he let you in the gate, so you may as well love him.
Call me the sphincter of the listener community.
Let's just pause to let the music swell, sadly.
Oh, God. Let's not.
All right, moving right along.
That as well, that was shit.
Well done, Daniel and Dean. Very, very impressive.
Yes, and I just poured out a whiskey to our,
That's right, our reputation.
Exactly.
Our streak is at an end. All other visitors will now be ensured employing the same tactics. And then finally, second to last, actually, last week we also did the top 10 coolest movie weapons.
Oh, yeah.
You also got reamed on that one, Wayne.
Man, did I get
and
fucked.
Boy, did people take umbrage at your Samuel L. Jackson. Sorry, what's his name? Nick Fury's thingy.
Look, I make no excuses. I still thought that was a good call. When it came out, I was like, fuck, yeah, that's right. I do, motherfucker. So, yeah, look, obviously it was not a popular choice. It's fine. I'm not a popular man.
32 votes to 15, although he would love your love, the new listeners in the community. So
I'm thinking they don't like me yet. We'll see.
So now that puts me ahead 3-2 on the year. I've caught up after your breakaway start.
Well done, old man.
Then, of course, we had our Oscar bet. 7 categories.
I've forgotten all of this shit.
I went through yesterday and I listened back. And you can go and do the double check on this.
No, I'm fine.
It's really close.
What?
It was stupidly
close.
Yeah.
So you always win.
Which one did you get right that I didn't? So you got one I didn't get right. And in the end, it all came down to the screenplays, which I got BlacKkKlansman. You didn't. That was the deciding vote. I think we both tipped Roma to win. It obviously didn't. You picked Green Book to win Best Original Screenplay, which I didn't. So that got you that
and
extra
it won.
Vote.
Oh, okay,
yes.
Well, there you are.
So in the end, it was a 4-3 win to me.
Well done.
Which means I get to pick 3 films for you to watch.
3? Fuck you. That's I don't recall saying 3.
We'll go check the tape then, shall we?
Fuck the tape. 3? Suck a dick. I would have said 1, right? 1.
Not necessarily for the main review of the show, but just over the course of the year.
That still hurts. All right.
I think it was James Spence who said, maybe you shouldn't get Wayne to watch horror films. Maybe you should get him to watch long films, given how often he wins.
Hey. Fuck all you people, man. And you know what?
But love Wayne. Remember that part? Love him.
Not you guys. What? Well,
you right, I'm gonna have a think about it.
Yeah,
I'm watching through the IMDb top 250 as part of this movie challenge this year, and I've got a couple there which I think you might like.
You gotta actually tailor that shit to me. Yeah, it can't be some fucking horror movie about ducks.
Well, look, we got It Chapter 2 coming later in the year. That's definitely watching that shit. So.
That's okay. I think J Chaz is in that.
She is.
Yeah. Mm. I'll watch it anyway.
Okay.
Word. Well,
that is all the results. We're going to wrap it up with a quick email from Chef Ben Randall from the In the Weeds podcast. He said he was busy and he missed out on the top 10 movie weapons episode. Here are the three he wanted to recommend that we didn't speak about that he said we overlooked most egregiously.
Let's hear it.
Mechagodzilla. I mean, that is a cool ass weapon. He has knee rockets.
The fuck is that?
Okay. It's obviously Mechagodzilla versus whatever.
Mechagodzilla.
The Bone Whip Sword from the Brotherhood of the Wolf, which is pretty cool.
Really? You're familiar with that?
I have familiar with that film. Very, very good.
Sounds cool.
And it's a good film. It has some great moments in it. It's very, very long. It's like 2.5 hours. Maybe we should get you to watch that one.
Fuck you.
And lastly, the saw blade throwers from Carpenter's Ghosts of Mars. Those things still scare the hell out of me. I don't understand how Ghosts of Mars can scare the hell out of anyone. That film is pants.
Ben? Yeah, I remember Paul shitting on this movie.
Oh, it's awful. It's an awful, awful film. But all right, if that's what did it for you, so be it. Thank you for that email, Chef Ben. All right, without any further ado then, on the other side of the music queue, let's do this. The top 10, last 10. Top 10 Last 10 show, as discussed, is where we give you mini reviews, a whole bunch of films we get to talk about on the show.
We'll tell you if they shit, and then we'll tell you when they're good.
Yeah, we'll tell you where the line is from we absolutely recommend. This is where you should start watching.
Toast.
Do you want to go first? Do you want me to?
I think I want you to go first.
All right. My number 10 is the worst film I've seen this year. It is also the worst film that I will see this year, because there is no way conceivably known to humankind that a film could be humanly worse.
Oh, this should be good.
Yeah. Apparently released in 2018, though, from what I understand, and given the starring cast, you'll understand it was filmed 2-3 years ago and has sat on a shelf somewhere whilst they tried to work out a way of making this into a reasonable film. It's called London Fields. It's directed by someone named Matthew Cullen. It stars Amber Heard, Theo James, Jim Sturgess, Billy Bob Thornton, Cara Delevingne, Jason Isaacs, and Johnny Depp.
Few names here.
What a cast, right?
Presumably, what, they made this when they were still together?
Exactly. Amber Heard and Johnny Depp are still together, so it's at least a couple of years old. It is based on a novel, for what I understand. And, okay, I'm going to read you the description. Clairvoyant femme fatale Nicola Six has been living with a dark premonition of her impending death by murder.
Death by murder!
She begins a tangled love affair with three uniquely different men, one of whom she knows will be her murderer. Do you see a problem with this film?
Yeah.
Yet.
I'm still reeling from the... Hang on. So she has...
The film opens basically with her... It's all from Billy Bob Thornton's perspective. He's a writer who's come to the UK and he's apartment traded with Jason Isaacs, who's a successful writer, more successful than Billy Bob Thornton. Mm. Jason Isaacs has gone to his house in New York or the Bronx or some shit.
Okay.
He's come to London.
Yep.
Hence London Fields. And his upstairs neighbor, across the neighbor, is this femme fatale, Nicola Six.
Who is Amber Heard. Okay.
Who is stunning. Like, say what you will about her as a human being, she is a stunning woman and plays at least the femme fatale well. So this whole film is built around sexualizing her.
Sure, and you can't be a gold-digging whore unless you are stunning, so that's cool.
it's not clear how she makes her money, but she lives in the same apartment as Jason Isaacs, a very successful writer.
She flicks Johnny Depp. Yes, go on. Yep. Go
on. Anyway, at the start of the film, she effectively tells Billy Bob Thornton, I know someone's going to murder me on the night of my 30th birthday.
Interesting.
And then she's involved with Jim Sturgess, who's this, whatever the chav, I think it is, equivalent of a bogan here is in Australia.
Chav.
And Theo James is this very uptight and whatever he is, successful businessman who wears suits and ties.
Mm-hmm.
And she's banging them all.
But she knows
knowing one of them is going to murder
her. Why would she do that?
Exactly.
Why there would she just cut all three of them? Stupidest piece of shit. How does she know one was... This is a piece of shit.
So you watch this whole film going, why doesn't she just fucking get on a train and drive away?
Yes.
Or take some of her money and effectively disappear.
At least until after her birthday.
Yes, continue seeing this person. Like, it kind of implies that it's fated and there's no way to avoid it, but it's a ridiculous notion for a film.
Yeah, I mean, are they all rich or something?
It's really shittily shot. It's awfully handled. Ugh. Everybody's terrible.
And they got
Johnny
Depp in this, and these other people.
She's dressing up to suit the sexual needs. It's icky. It's disgusting. this film is one is the biggest piece of shit you can humanly that
sounds
hope
like
to ass. See.
And is it boring also? It sounds like you just didn't even like it at all.
It's horrible. I watched it 2-3 nights. I kept falling asleep during it, thank God.
Oh, God.
Saving myself the pain. Yeah. Eventually got through to the end of it. And I just don't understand anything in this. Billy Bob Thornton's character is a fuckwit. Jim Sturgess's character, he's nauseating by the end of the film.
Uh-huh.
And poor Theo James is kind of, you know, played off as the idiot guy. He's married, so he's willing to cheat on his wife to be with her because she's so attractive. You just can't help yourself. Just says all the wrong things about humankind, that's man or women.
Not well written. Yeah, what's it called?
Terrible. Then? London Fields.
London
avoid
Fields.
Like the plague.
Coolio. Well, here's another one that you can avoid, people. My number 10, I feel bad about this because a listener from the community called recommended this, Mike Margosian. I'm sorry about this because I really wanted to like this and then we could talk about it and like it together. But the movie is called Isn't It Romantic? It's on Netflix. And
I've seen the first half hour.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
We just stopped it last time. We were tired. Couldn't get
I wish
through.
I could do that.
Okay.
Okay. What it's about is, first of all, Mike, I would have seen this anyway because it's a romantic comedy. I do that. Okay. It's about Rebel Wilson, who plays a large Australian girl who's working as an architect in New York. She's unlucky in love and has a particular aversion to romantic comedies and how they all have the same meaningless cliches, like the slow-mo scenes where someone has to stop a wedding.
I like that part of it.
Yeah, that's the funny part, right? But she hates that. Anyway,
I like not the part of rom-coms. I like the fact that she calls rom-coms out for being
that. Absolutely. That was most definitely the best part about the movie. She then gets mugged and runs into a pole and knocks herself out. And when she wakes up, she's inexplicably living inside a romantic comedy. Everything looks awesome. The colors in New York and shit like that. It looks like a movie set. Everyone's hot or in a cliched role. And a really good looking billionaires like Liam Hemsworth want to bang her. Okay? Now.
Which is how you know it's a fantasy.
It is. It is indeed. Now, I want to be like perfectly clear here, right? This is a premise that could have worked.
Okay.
I think, and not in any way that's going to change anyone's life, but all we want from these movies is to laugh, right? Yep. And be entertained.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm 34 minutes in or something, I've laughed twice.
Honestly, the best thing about this movie is the banging soundtrack. It's full of old 90s romantic bullshit songs like I Love You Always Forever and shit like that, and like Breakout, all sorts
it's
of
like
crap,
to
right?
a different language.
I know. But it's, oh, you know what? I'm not going to spoil it for you. I'm just going to tell you what happened.
No, don't spoil it for me, nor the listeners. Oh, the whole point God. Of Top 10 Last 10 is you don't spoil it.
All right, let me just say there's a musical number in it at some stage, and it is fucking nauseating. It's
wouldn't be
very,
hard.
Very
it's a musical
bad.
Number.
Yes, the humor that does, there's like two or three moments in here where I giggled, where Liam Hemsworth is sort of oddly dancing while he's on the phone. It's kind of weird, but it was funny to watch.
Okay.
But for the most part, this is crap. So, unfortunately, Mike, it wasn't my jam, but I said, like, I would have been in there anyway just to watch it at least.
All right.
So, sorry, dog.
No, we always appreciate listeners giving
Absolutely.
Us a recommendation,
and
good or bad.
I usually go into it, so yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, my number 9 is also reprehensibly shit. Like, so shit, it hurts. It's really? Not quite as bad as London Fields, but it tries really
wow.
hard. And it stars our favorite, Bruce Willis.
Oh, no. He's done a few of these. Go on.
John Goodman.
Oh. All right.
Yeah. And sadly, quite a few other name. There's the Adam Goldbergs
okay.
of the world.
Okay, I mean Adam Goldberg.
Jason Momoa.
Whoa, really?
Thomas Middleditch, you might recognize
yeah,
him.
Yeah, from yeah. fucking... Yep. Yeah.
Famke Janssen.
What movie is this?
It's called Once Upon a Time in Venice. And it is a film so far out of its time that it's hilarious. This is a...
I've never even heard of this.
I know.
How did I not
I
hear
stumbled
about it?
Across it one night, late at night. On Netflix and went, oh, okay, well, let's just see how bad this Bruce Willis film could be that I've never heard of before. And to be fair to Bruce, he's arguably the best thing about the movie.
Uh-huh.
This is awful, this film.
Why?
It's basically, he plays this sort of private detective who works at Venice Beach and everybody kind of knows him. And he gets embroiled in, well, his dog gets kidnapped effectively. And to get his dog,
oh my God.
To get his dog back, he has to do these favors for Jason Momoa's gangster. He's funny, a little bit funny in the film.
Jason Moore, okay, that's something.
But any film that within 10 minutes has Bruce Willis skateboarding naked through the streets
Wait,
of
what
Venice
is it?
At night.
Is it a comedy?
It's meant to be.
So is it a comedy first or is it an action comedy?
No, there's barely any action. It's a comedy. It's a straight out comedy.
And it's
kind
bad.
Of quirky drama thriller, crime thriller. And it's awful. It is so bad, it hurts my brain.
Oh my god. I'm actually amazed at this.
It's not funny at all.
If you told me that's cast and that it's a comedy, I'd go, yep.
It has a horrendous voiceover narration to try and patch things together. It's so terrible.
Wow.
Every character decision makes you just go, why? So why is this? It's like a Pulp Fiction throwaway wannabe that's 20 years too late. This is a film from 1997 that has somehow transposed to 2017, and we all hope that no one will notice.
That is nuts.
Thankfully, the writer and directors of this film, the Cullen brothers, I believe they're called.
Cullen brothers.
Yeah, Mark Cullen and Rob Cullen are pretty sure they've never done anything ever again, and neither should they. They should be barred from making films forever.
This sounds like it would have been expensive to make. With all that casting.
I seriously doubt it. It's such a turkey. It's
wow.
These first two films, I struggled to believe how bad they were.
And now I want to look it up. Now I want to look it up.
In that bizarre way.
I saw that Bruce Willis card on Netflix with the shot of him and his dog.
Yeah. He's got a sawn off shotgun in his hand.
Yeah.
John Goodman, probably the most notable thing about the film is he is sporting the worst rug you have ever seen in your entire life. And I assume deliberately.
Yeah.
But if that's the case, you're supposed to have it come off at some point so you can see that. Never does.
Okay. I see what you mean. Okay. Wow. That's actually huge.
How did John Goodman and Jason Momoa find themselves mixed up in this piece of shit?
Because maybe someone said, hey, it's a Bruce Willis movie. And it went, sweet. And then it's got all these other people in there that you know, which are all names. These are not like no one. And I don't know.
It is.
No one read the script. They just said, yes, who knows?
I mean, obviously Bruce Willis doesn't read these scripts anymore. And he doesn't get his agents to. And he does look like he's wryly amused through the film. But even then, it's just awful. So yeah, there's another one to actively avoid.
Okay.
Unless you're like Wayne and want to see the gory details of the car crash on the side of the road.
I do not. Name again?
A Once Upon a Time in Venice.
All right. Okay. My number nine, people, is a show that Paul saw earlier in the year. He didn't actively tell me what he thought about it, but I knew what he thought about it. It's called Rampage.
I mean, last year I saw it.
Last year. Okay. So this is the Dwayne The Rock Johnson one, where he is... The movie is of an old arcade game we used to play back in the day, where a big wolf and a big ape and a big fucking dragon take out a fucking city or something. I didn't really expect much from this, and I didn't get much from this. There's this...
it's terrible.
There's this evil company who's doing research on genetic mutating...
And that brother and sister is so
bad. Oh, fuck. The brother and sister own this company, and they're doing, they're researching mutating bioweapons or something, and it's so dangerous. They do all their experiments up in space, but then that space station blows up, and a canister of the mutagen crashes, lands on Earth, comes into contact with a bunch of animals, like a gorilla in a zoo enclosure, a wolf in a forest, and some other shit, like a damn crocodile, and then shit goes down because they become big and start fucking shit up. Now, The Rock is a zoologist.
Of course he is.
Okay? And he's friends with the gorilla, who's like a white gorilla, and then like whatever. He ends up being bad for a while, but then it becomes good because it actually is not worth going through the plot because it doesn't fucking matter.
It's awful.
It's awful. But more than that, it should... You know what? If it was a crap plot with all this other shit, which it is, but it was entertaining, I'm fine with that because this is that kind of movie, right? But this is actually just shit. Like, the bad guys are shit. As you said, it's Marlon Ackerman and some dude, and their brother and sister, and she's wearing the most unconvincing hairpiece thing ever. Like,
well, except John Goodman in Once Upon a Time. Well, that's
like just looking at, oh my god! And I have nothing to say about, oh, if it was more ridiculous, it could have been better. It was just shit.
It's terrible. It's a terrible film. It didn't make my top worst end of the year, but it would have been my worst 20 of last year for sure.
I think I've had to say one good thing about it is like some of the CGI for when the animal, like the big monster animals were running through the forest and shit, looked kind of good, like it was handled quite well.
Yeah, they off a couple of characters fairly early on that I was a little bit mildly surprised by.
Yeah, there's a very surprising death. Yeah. Oh, no way, really? Okay.
That got a little bit of kudos, but Jeffrey Dean Morgan basically just still playing Negan from The Walking Dead.
Funny. I do love him, though. I saw the Negan scene and stuff, that's hard to take, but Jeffrey Dean Morgan's fucking cool.
he's playing the same dude, except rather than being who he is in The Walking Dead, he's the CIA. He's in the CIA,
he's still a fucking cunt.
But at least he wasn't, he could have been all the way evil, and he wasn't, which was a nice...
Yeah, if you're looking for nuances and characters and stuff, there's about 10%. Yeah. It's there's not much.
That's a generous description, but yes, there you go.
Anyway, Rampage, don't see it.
All right,
that you were going to.
If you haven't already, there's no way you're going to bother.
No.
My number eight... I want to have a big thanks to Billy Dunham, patron of the show, but more importantly, has his own podcast, We Watched a Thing podcast. We mentioned him a lot because he does a lot for the show. I really want to thank you, Billy, again for coming through here. On the episode with the Master Debaters, Toffa and Sean, I mentioned one of my big pitches was
a Jaws prequel, which would follow the USS Indianapolis, and that it would follow Quint's character on that
boat. Yes,
that's
right. I remember.
And da 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 da. Well, I did say that there has been a film made with Nicolas Cage in it called Men of Courage.
Well, you found it.
Called USS Indianapolis, : Men of Courage. And Billy found it for me.
Wow.
And he sent it to me.
Because it's hard to find.
I've never found it. Never seen it anywhere.
This guy's got skills, man.
Billy managed to find it. He sent it through to me and I got to sit down and watch it. And I don't know if you've watched it yet, Billy, but if you have, thanks.
What's it like?
No, I really, really appreciate it. It's exactly as awful as you imagine. It is 2 hours and 40 minutes, I think, from memory. Nope, it just felt like that. It was 2 hours and 10 minutes. And Nicolas Cage is the captain of the USS Indianapolis, and their job was to take the bomb that they would drop on Hiroshima across to wherever they could then pick it up, fly it, and drop it on Hiroshima. And therefore, it's all black books and under the radar. And as they're sailing back, they get shot by a Japanese submarine, and they sink very, very quickly. And then the 800 or 900 men who survive the sinking go into the water and are gradually picked off by sharks.
Like is Quint in it?
It's a great story. No, there's no Quint. It's got nothing to do with Quint.
So it's like barely...
It's the story about this. And it's so hard to describe. This film wants to be in... It wants to be the next Pearl Harbor / Titanic.
Yeah.
It wants to be that grandiose. The budget was about $40 million. I looked it up. So it's nowhere near the budget of those two films.
Yeah.
And geez, you can tell.
Because when you shoot on the water, everything's way more expensive.
Yeah. So expensive that your sharks are a combination of archival footage...
Oh, no.
And really shit CG. Really shit. Like Sharknado shit.
Oh, my
CG.
God.
It's so bad. It looks so awful, this film. And everybody, prepare yourself for this statement.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage is the most grounded actor in the entire film.
Oh, holy shit.
Everybody else is playing it to 12 and Cage is capping it at 8.
Is he the only
Tom
star?
Sizemore is in this film and he's so far over the top once he gets injured. It is hard to watch. Not in a, oh, this is breaking my heart kind of way. In a, what the fuck is he doing kind of way.
What gets me is that a movie like this is actually hard to find. Like, this has actually been buried, actively buried.
Yeah,
because you can go get a copy of The Wicker Man anywhere, like online and shit. But this you couldn't find.
The Wicker Man is arguably a better film than this.
Wow.
It's so bad. And it's, I read all about the actual events and it sort of sanitizes elements of it and characters making decisions you don't understand at all.
It's not a true story.
Yeah, it's a true story. I mean...
But Quint's not a true story.
No, Quint's not, but the USS Indianapolis is.
It got sunk.
And the captain, Nicolas Cage, what happens to him in the film really happened in real life. So you can look it up if you want to.
Oh, I see. So it's based... Got it. Yep.
Yeah. So, but it kind of... They get rescued half an hour before the end of the film and it just fucking drags on.
If it's 900 dudes in the water, right? Are they all
300 of them survive.
So sharks just carve this swath through all these dudes, basically. Yeah. And
66% of people who went into the water were eaten by sharks or drowned.
That is completely fucked.
Mm.
Wow, okay.
But it would be a great film if done with an ounce of subtlety / skill. Okay. And it's directed by Mario Van Peebles of the Posse fame.
Now it all makes sense.
This film is complete fucking garbage. It's only slightly better than the last two films I watched. And that's mostly because of Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas. All right, good. Well, for my number 8 is, not to offend anyone here.
Uh-oh. Fuck, hang on. Let me get the soundboard ready.
It's fine. It's just some people. Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Oh, isn't this the Alfonso Cuarón one?
Yes, it was. Oh. So I was really looking forward to it. And it's not great. This
you're not setting me up well for when my daughter reaches an age where we can start watching these films together.
See, the thing is, I've only seen this is the last one I saw. Okay, the last one is I don't know what it's called.
It's not Goblet of Fire, it's something else.
Yeah, something like that, right? That's cool. I will still see them because I know that they get like better and better, I'm told, right? But people have told me that this is the breakout movie. This is the one where it all becomes
This is the lowest budget one. I can tell you that from my time on the IMDb Journey podcast.
Really?
Yeah, this one made the least money.
Well, it doesn't... Maybe it's... Look, it's an older movie, so the CGI is not great or anything, right?
Yeah.
But it's also not that great anyway. Like, it's just kind of a long sit, and the story is a little, like... it's a dour kind of visual palette, and there's, like, uninspiring kind of action. It wasn't... But then again, maybe I don't get the whole Quidditch thing. I don't know.
is this the one that's largely about Quidditch? Does it have Cuarón sort of visual flourishes in his directing?
Honestly, not...
So there's really? no long shots.
There are a few, but it's not that. It's not like, you know, like Arrival or something. What was it, Arrival? Did you do Arrival? You did Arrival.
No, that was Denis Villeneuve.
Oh, yeah, Denis Villeneuve. No. I don't know, a little bit, but nothing like you would expect. And I think, to be fair, it was earlier in his career. But yeah, it's not. If you're looking for, like, you know, Children of Men, yeah, like you're not going to get
Gravity,
that.
Gravity.
Because it's a kid's film, too, as well. Like, it'd be hard for a kid to watch.
I'm surprised it doesn't have his sort of penchant for the long shot.
Maybe, like, what I think is the fans of this thing won't give a fuck. A lot of them really love this.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so I guess there's always that. But, like, you know, it's nice to see Alan Rickman again and stuff, I guess. So, yeah.
If that's your best take from it. Okay, so this is not a recommend, obviously.
No, but I'm hoping that I will find one that I do recommend. So I'm still going to keep watching.
Okay.
So,
My number seven is a film which has just opened around Australia. I think it was out in the UK quite a while ago.
Mm.
We got the invite to the screen, but I couldn't make it. I don't think you saw it either.
Which one?
It's from the director of The Theory of Everything. It's James Marsh's King of Thieves.
No, I did not.
Which is the Michael Caine, Jim Broadbent, Ray Winston, Michael Gambon film. And old Charlie Cox as well.
I remember getting that invite, and I remember what you told me before, which is why I didn't attend. Please go on.
This film is an absolute bag of ass.
It must be so shit.
It's so bad. It's effectively, and it's hard to believe it comes from an Academy Award. I don't think James Marsh won the Academy Award, but
nommed.
He's been nominated as the best director. This film is complete shit.
From the trailer with Michael Caine and all these old classic English actors in it, I'm like, well, this could be great. But then I watched the trailer and I was like, it doesn't look great though. Apparently it's not.
It's
what's wrong
really,
with it?
Really bad. It is an excuse for 90 odd minutes, maybe 100 minutes. Yeah, 106 minutes long for old men to swear at each other.
Is that at least funny?
Nope.
No.
It's not played
They're
for
British.
Laughs.
It should be hilarious. Oh, I see.
It's not played for laughs. It's played dead straight. So Michael Caine sitting there going, if you fucking cunts. Yeah, here's me doing my accent again.
I'm just imagining.
Fucking cunts would just fucking listen. And then Ray Winston going, well, I'll fuck you up, motherfucker.
Ray Winston.
God, this is so shit. It's awful. It's based on a true story about a group of elderly thieves who pulled off a huge heist.
That should make it interesting. And then they got caught. Yeah.
But they pull off. But it's so bad. I watched this film aghast. I'm not even sure why it's ranked higher than the other three, because it's just as bad. And this will be on my worst 10 films of the year cinematically when we do that at the end of the year.
You know that already.
No question. There is no way there are 10 worst films coming out that I will see at the cinema this year worse than this.
This is horrible. What would you score it?
25.
Whoa.
It's so shit house.
That's amazing.
They treat each other like shit. The plot, the characterizations go nowhere. Yes, Ray Winston is the younger of the group.
Yeah.
Jim Broadbent, the reason I tell you, actually, no, I remember now why this got slightly higher than the others, is Jim Broadbent playing against type is kind of scary.
Really?
He's a really good actor, Jim Broadbent. He's the one exception in this film. So he's normally even though in Hot Fuzz he ends up being what he's in Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, yeah.
But in every other film, he's the nice guy.
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine him.
But he actually has moments where he's menacing.
That's great.
Yeah, so he shows a range. Michael Caine is sleepwalking his way through this film.
Really?
Yeah.
At his age? I mean, I guess.
It's really sad.
Because I love Michael Caine, man.
And given all the things it sets up, it ends on the most false note ever. It's just a terrible film.
Wow.
Do not see King of Thieves under any circumstances.
You don't wonder how that works out. Okay, good one. My number seven is a movie that I've been told about for many years, and I've wanted to check it out because the director is a favorite director of mine, and it got panned, this movie. The movie's Aloha.
Oh, God.
Cameron Crowe.
No, of course I haven't.
Oh. So apparently this movie is adapted from a book, and it's about Bradley Cooper, who's, or, you know, whatever his name is.
Whatever his name is.
I'm sure his name is something.
Probably not Bradley Cooper, I would agree.
Probably not, no. Let's say Bradley Cooper, he's playing this guy who used to be a NASA Air Force pilot, but now he's a military contractor for Bill Murray, who's a billionaire. And
Bill Murray's in this.
This is a lot
this
of
is why you should have an agent, Bill.
Dude, they've got Rachel McAdams in this, Emma Stone. There's a lot of our names in this, right? He has to go to Hawaii to facilitate the blessing of some bridge with the local people, and that's to allow Bill Murray to build his huge space station, which he wants to do a lot of shit for, which doesn't matter because...
of course he does.
Yeah. Rachel McAdams is his old flame, and she's now married to John Krasinski. And he's also assigned an assistant, Emma Stone, who happens to be an ace fighter pilot. But she's also quirky and enthusiastic and constantly repeats how she's part Hawaiian, even though she's literally the whitest person who ever lived. And I think...
But if I say it enough, then you'll believe it.
But you know what it is, though? Apparently people got pissy about this movie because that character in the book was Eurasian. So much so that her last name is NG.
Wow.
Right? Yep. And then you've got Emma Stone playing...
Yeah, she's not pulling off
Allison.
I don't care how many times she wins an Academy Award, she can't pull off an mm.
Seriously, like... but it's for real, she can't pull off an mm. And...
That should be a new thing on our podcast.
That's right.
Can you pull off an mm?
Oh, he couldn't pull off an mm to save his life. But you know what? Actually, when she talks about, like Alec Baldwin's in this, and he's the only thing that has a chance of saving this movie.
For
and
you.
Yeah, yeah.
For the rest of the world, this film is shot.
To be fair, he's great. But like, but it's only in it for like 10 seconds. But like, he talks to, like, he's like, he calls it ing because they can't say mm. Right? And like, he's talking to her like, you know, Corporal Ng, so come over here, right? Ng. And she's got the widest eyes of a person.
Never noticed that about
which
her.
Is the exact opposite of an Asian person.
Correct.
Trust me, I have looked far and wide for Asian women that look this white. They don't fucking, they don't
exist. Except in anime.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Which is not life. And I'm not fucking one of those, so.
But what if you could?
No. God, it's so sick. All right. Anyway, the way the script is, this movie here is weird because all of the acting, I'm about 20 minutes and I'm noticing, I'm like, hey, this is oddly overplayed. The way he's directed them to talk is weird. You're never sure what each of the characters is doing, what their purpose is. It's really poorly written. And I'm like, Cameron, what's going on here, son? Now, of course, being Cameron Crowe, the music is fantastic. Right?
Okay,
it's
sure.
Really cool.
That's about as far as you can go. All right.
It is, and it does have that sort of that fast-paced, happy tone of a Cameron Crowe movie, even though in Hawaii where it's set, which is like, oh, it must be great to look at, right? It's always overcast. I don't know if that was a choice of his or not, but it doesn't look like this idyllic Hawaii beautiful thing. And okay. you could have used a bit of that, I gotta tell you.
Okay.
So, yeah, didn't buy any of this. Like, it was really shit. And, well, no, it was really shit. I do not recommend this at all.
Oh, so that's your 7.
The 7.
All right. No, that's all right. We haven't crossed your recommended. We're about to cross mine.
Okay.
Now. So here's where I start recommending films. Everything from here on out, I would recommend, obviously to an increasing extent as we go. My number 6 is a film which caught my fancy last year. It's a Christmas film, which happens to be a musical horror.
What?
It's called Anna and the Apocalypse.
What the hell is this now?
I saw
you talking with someone about this.
Joel McPhail. Yeah, I think David Powell in the Facebook listening community was really hardcore into this film. I will say this. As someone who doesn't like musicals, one day we will do the top 10, no doubt, musicals.
No,
this will be on my list.
Really?
This will be on my list because I haven't seen that many. And I didn't hate it. And 3 of the songs have made it into my iTunes playlist.
Whoa. When Paul does that, shit gets serious. When we saw Pulp Fiction...
In fact, I'll play out the episode with... a song from this
particular
soundtrack, because some of them are really good. Some of the songs are really good. However, it has to get past a very huge mountain in my case, and that is characters who suddenly and without reason nor rhyme will sing and dance in time and then carry on as if nothing has happened. I cannot buy into this. I just can't.
The structure itself bothers you, I understand.
Some people hate horror films. I've said this before on the podcast. Because characters do stupid things and they were never happening. Exactly the same at musicals. It doesn't work in real life.
You need an explanation.
Yes.
Like the Scrubs
episode.
Like
Buffy episode. Exactly. All that kind of stuff. Once there's an explanation, I can get on board. So I had to get over that.
Musical people to, you know, take notes.
That said, half an hour in, I was like, I'm on board here. I'm enjoying this film. And then because it's trying to meld musical, comedy, horror all into one.
Yeah.
The horror elements really start to suffer.
I reckon, I don't think, just, I've obviously not seen it, but if you try and put musical and horror together, I don't see any way that...
Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Sweeney Todd, this is the next example I can think of that. Except Sweeney Todd was just them
that was dank.
Singing
yeah.
their thoughts,
yeah.
Which I'm much more okay with than I am with this, because literally everybody starts...
Yeah, you know, that's it. The jaunty type of thing is never going to work for horror.
So. What doesn't work is we have to take shortcuts to put the characters where we need them to be. And so there are some really dumb character moments and therefore bad script writing to put them where they need to be for the script to work. Yeah, so okay. The first half hour, it's all set up. We don't have that, what's the word, restriction. It's just, it's okay. It's working all right. It's setting the characters up. Then when the horror sort of zombie apocalypse starts, because they're battling zombies in this in this particular movie, we have to have them do stupid things to bring the characters back together, and it just does not work at all.
Yeah. I don't know how to write stuff, but I you can just tell when that's not working.
Yeah, there's a guy who ends up being the bad guy, the villain who's not dead, who's alive and well. And the characters, the way they interact with him, I'm just like, you would just punch this guy in the face, slash knock him out, slash throw him out to the zombies before you let what happens happen. It's okay. So dumb.
So unbelievable, you say.
And then the final climactic face-off battle is just awful. So it gets, and sadly, this is a film that gets worse.
So this is not a recommend.
It's a recommend.
It's a recommend.
It is a recommend because it's so strong in the first half. The second half, for me, as a horror lover first and a musical lover last, doesn't work.
I'll just finish what I said about Paul there. When Paul puts songs from a movie onto his iPod or whatever, that's important.
Yeah.
When Pulp Fiction came out, we actually went, oh, that Urge Overkill song, that's fucking shit, that song. But then Paul liked it. Ding, ding, ding. You'll be my asshole soon. Yeah. That's a shit song.
I like it.
Really shit. But Paul put it on his shit after that. So it's a big thing. Anyway, from one show with a good front half and a shit back half to another. This, people, I've been waiting to talk to you about, okay? The movie is a Netflix film and it's called The Package.
Oh,
God. Oh, no, wait. Give me a sec. Have you seen it?
I've seen the first 10 fucking minutes.
All right, wait a minute. Now, this is a Netflix film in which, like, high school kids go camping and then some bad shit happens. Long story short, one of the kids, what?
Patsy and I watched first 10 minutes and she turned to me and said,
Wait,
turn this shit off.
Stop. Let me just tell you about this, okay?
And you're telling me the first half is good.
The first half is... the first half.
Kiss my sweaty balls, you fat fuck.
It might be the first act.
So it was awful. And it gets worse from there.
Wait, I cannot
humanly believe it.
Okay, this is going to be interesting now. Okay, let me tell you what it's about, folks, all right? Long story short, one of the kids, who's an odd-looking Native American boy with long straight hair, who's quite funny, I think, him and his friends go out camping.
Wrong. Nothing's funny about these guys.
No, shut up. It is. Then they get completely baked and are sitting around a campfire at night, and then the Native American kid goes for a piss while playing with his new butterfly knife, okay? So this is... Picture this. It's funny because he's stoned. He's in the darkness. He's taking a piss and he's playing with his butterfly knife, and he's going... Yo, man, he's saying shit like a stoner. He's like, yo, man, this knife is so sharp, it cuts piss. And he starts hacking at the stream of piss that's coming out of his dick, right? You can see where this is going, all right? And then his friends come up behind him to playfully, like, prank him and go, boo, right? Or something. And they yell, and he goes, ah, this. And then the very next shot is this slow-mo, like, his dismembered cock sailing through the air, right? And it comes all the way out, and it basically, like, it's quite gross. But then... It opens the doorway for the largest amount of dick jokes you've ever seen. Now, I understand what you're thinking, and Paul's shaking his head because he's a bitch, all right? But...
Take it back!
Fuck you! This is pretty good writing, all right?
No, it's not!
I'm telling you, no, not the actual story itself, but the jokes and the way they play it, and that girl who's from Blockers and stuff, they are doing good things with the gags. They are funny jokes. All right, I'm telling you, they're funny-ass jokes. Paul doesn't understand humor, so he wouldn't know, all right? But... It's good. Now, unfortunately, by the way, there was a ton of subtle movie references in here. But like, when
wow.
Oh, look, shut up.
This is terrible.
You can suck
my
dick.
So this is better than Aloha?
Yes. It is because I had about.
Is this what you recommend?
Wait till the end. Wait till the end. Okay. Because what happens is at the end of this movie, unfortunately, it starts to drag.
Oh.
All right.
Well, there. Wow. The end is worse than the start.
No. Halfway through, if you can imagine such a thing, there are too many dick jokes. They overplay their hand.
Whoa. Bullshit.
I know. There are too many. They overplay their hand. And you can tell that they're just inventing situations
so they can make a dick joke.
Right?
But,
yeah.
But for you to say...
Like I said, I am
on your side again.
Bullshit.
I'm telling you. Yeah. There's too many dick jokes in this movie.
Wow.
And what happens is...
And yet this is your number six.
Yeah. It's my number six because that first...
Let me just get that clear, everyone. Wayne says there's too many dick jokes and it's his number
exactly.
six.
Exactly. And this is my number... But again, for the first 30 minutes, it made it past Aloha because Aloha was all shit. This was 30 minutes good shit. All right? So I'm pissed that they weren't able to keep the story moving along because this was going to be... Based on the first 20, it was going to be a number three.
I guarantee this would have been my worst film last year had I watched it.
I... agree with you because it turns to shit. But I'm telling you, if you shut this off about 30, 40 minutes in, you're okay.
I shut off 10 minutes in and I was angry.
Yeah, but you hadn't let it fucking take you yet, okay? The good stuff comes around 20 minutes, all right? I'm just saying, people, if you want to not be a closed-minded fuck like Paul... Right?
You like to suck my balls.
Just give it a... Like, you may not like it because you're not me. I understand that shit. Exactly. But it's better, better than you would think. All right?
Wow.
Also, in the Netflix queue, it doesn't even say the package. It's just like a zucchini or whatever emoticon on the screen. So you may miss this thing quite easily.
It's awful.
It's fucking...
I can tell you.
Look, it is awful, but it turned awful. It wasn't to start with.
All right, well...
Anyway, Paul...
We don't compare notes.
Sucks dick.
Paul sucks package.
Yes, he does suck an eggplant.
Ah, shit. All right. My number five. Thank God we're going to leave that kind of...
I don't even know what the fuck your ass's problem is.
Distressing shit behind. My number five is actually a very good film. Everything from here, for me, is 3.5 stars and up.
Very muff.
It is a film we talked about doing as a feature review because it's coming out this Thursday, I think, in Australia, which probably tells you something, but let's move right on. It's The Sisters Brothers.
Oh, okay. You saw this.
Yes. It's a well-directed, acted, and characterized Western drama, which is very different than the usual. It follows Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Okay, I actually don't know how to say his real name anymore. Joaquin Phoenix, yeah. And John C. Reilly, and they are brothers. And they are assassins, effectively, who are hired by, or usually work for Rutger Hauer to kill people that he doesn't want around.
Is it set in like cowboy times?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's a Western.
It's Western. And
they are hired to kill Riz Ahmed,
mm-hmm.
who is, for some reason, he's offended Rutger Hauer's character. And Jake Gyllenhaal is their scout. He goes out and tells them what's going on with this guy so they can get to him and track him down. And
that sounds actually pretty cool.
And it's those four really are the main actors. Rutger Hauer barely gets a look in the film. It's really a character study of these two brothers and why they do what they're doing. It's directed by a French guy who I should know more about, but I really don't. Jacques Audiard.
Jacques.
Yeah. And it's really different. It's really it's not fast moving. It's kind of slow paced. It is a character study. There are some action sequences in it, but it's not an action. It's absolutely not an action. In fact, lots of the sequences are you don't get to see, you hear the shots, you don't get to see what's going on.
That can work if the story is good enough.
These two guys are so good at killing people though, you kind of get that through the film that
really?
Yeah. And how and where it goes from there. And I don't want to spoil anything more than that because it hasn't opened here in Australia yet, but it's a good film.
The Sisters Brothers.
Yeah, and they're called Sisters is their last name.
I know,
yeah.
I get that. But I think that's the reason this thing didn't take off.
Who knows?
I don't get the title.
It didn't make a lot of money, but it's a well worth your look. If you're at all a fan of Western, everyone's good in it, John C. Reilly is the main character and he's particularly good.
Yeah, that's what I looked at and I went, hell, that guy? Holy shit. Hmm. So yeah, all right, The Sisters Brothers. Is it not a true story or anything?
No, okay. It's all completely made up.
So, all right, fine. My number five was actually a damn documentary.
Oh.
And it's a popular one from Netflix.
Fire. This would be, around here for me too, if I was to have talked about it today.
Okay, great. So, everyone, this documentary is about a seemingly successful young tech entrepreneur named Billy McFarland, who created this app called Fire. The app is supposed to be a method of booking big entertainment acts like famous people, and they can do it by the app instead of using a booking agent. Oh, by the way, he collaborates with Ja Rule, or Paul knows as Ja Rule. And by the way, Ja Rule is a fuckwit.
There's a lot of people who are fuckwits in this movie.
Lots of people in the movie are fuckwits, but he's a real fuckwit. So anyway, to promote the app, they decided to hold this massive music festival with huge names appearing. The festival was going to be mega exclusive. And then it became the biggest disaster ever. This guy claimed to have bought an island where he's going to put it on. But then it was
Pablo Escobar's
island. They ran into legal problems. There was no electricity on the island. And none of them had ever put a festival like this before, together like before. But this guy was particularly good, and I've known guys like this. I've known these entrepreneur guys, right, who are like, yeah, man, for some reason, their particular one talent is being in a room with investors and getting money.
Just selling it.
And I know guys like that who have just got that kind of like magnetism or they're just convincing.
Mm, that's a good word.
Yeah. I've seen these guys. So this guy is definitely one of those folks, and he just kept getting money from investors more and more and more, up to like $25 million. And nothing was done right. The act started pulling out. People had bought tickets. They couldn't get the right fucking accommodation. They were promising things they couldn't.
Yeah.
And it ended up being people turning up on this island to like basically, it sounds like it devolved into this hurricane type fucking like
Lord of the Flies. Yeah, kinda. That's the word. Devolved into Lord of the Flies.
Yeah. And it was like, it was so bad. Everyone was so shat. This guy's completely fucked. And the, like, for a lot of the movie, you're going, okay, did he go to jail or not? Because they have heaps of footage, you know? And I won't spoil how it happens.
Yeah,
but
don't spoil more than that, because, I mean, it's a matter of record. You can look it up, what does take place. But what the film does is show you this disaster unfolding. Like, they've got an incredible amount of footage that they have gleaned access to. So it was people who were there and who were saying, this is bad for these reasons. Bang, bang, bang. And also just how powerful social media influencers are. So lots of people were like, ah, fuck these rich cunts who could afford to go and pay this. Ha, 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 screw this. But it's so much more than that.
No, like, it's way more
than
that.
The local people and how they're affected.
The Bohemian people?
Awful.
Absolutely.
It's really awful. And God, by the end of this film, I hated this guy. I
hated him completely.
And Yarul.
Yarul, yeah, exactly.
No, I'm gonna keep calling that.
Yarul is a dickhead, though, because he's like, they're saying, like, listen, we fucking defrauded everyone. He's like, is that fraud? I would say it's false advertising. I'm like,
well, that's all right,
dude,
then.
That is actually almost the definition of fraud.
Yeah, he's a dickhead.
He's a dickhead, right?
But the other guy is a
he's the worst.
He's a narcissistic sociopath.
Yeah, he knew it was going south, and he just pushed
it.
He didn't care.
I'm not pulling out now.
Exactly. And these
and then what happens in the film, which just shows he has no moral compunction. Whatsoever.
And
just doesn't care. He's like, oh, fuck.
At one stage, he asks his tour manager, who happens to be a gay guy.
Oh, God, that's a great
to go,
moment.
Yeah,
to illustrate how bad this film is, or how far it goes.
It tells him to go to the harbor or airport official and suck his dick so that they will release this water for the fucking... And he was about to... It's a long story, but you go watch that.
Yeah,
it's
and the guy says, I'm doing it. All right.
I'm going to go do it. Yeah, and this guy's like, you know, it's horrible. And then it's... I thought it was just, like, really, really engrossing. Because you're sitting there going, how bad can it get?
We talked about doing it as a feature review, and I would have been happy to do that.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
It's a good film. Yeah, nice pick.
Give it a try. Fire.
Absolutely. If you haven't seen it, you should. My number four is a film which is very under the wire, and it's had a mainstream release in New Zealand because it's a New Zealander film and a Kiwi film, and everyone should watch this movie because I think it's really funny. It's called The Breaker Upperers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really good.
Aussie movie, yeah?
No. Kiwi
film.
Directed by Madeline Sammy and Jackie Van Beek, who are the main characters in the film.
Whoa. I saw the trailer for this.
Yeah, it's good.
It's good?
Yeah.
My mind is blown.
It's 3.5 stars good. It's funny.
Like, fuck.
It's charming. It's a Kiwi film
I'll
to the nines.
I'll put it on the list. I don't give a shit.
It's a Kiwi film to the nines. Now, I don't want to build up too much for you because we have different comedy styling tastes. Like, you're all into the gross out side of things, and
not always, but I
pretty much,
yeah,
and I'm into the more sophisticated humor, and this falls onto that side of it.
Well, I'm sorry, what was screening in the Ivory Tower today?
where the Venn diagram crosses for us is giving each other shit.
Yes, you're right.
It's basically a film about these two women who have set themselves up to, you don't want to break up with your partner, it's too hard for whatever reason, we'll do it for you.
Not bad.
So we can do it by singing a telegram, we can, you know, lie to their face about how you've disappeared / been killed, we'll dress up as cops and come to your house and say, I'm sorry, they've disappeared.
Wow.
So it's ridiculous to a point, but it's grounded in a certain way, and one of their clients falls for, who's only 18 or 19 years old, falls for the younger woman of the two, and it sort of sets off a set of events, I should say, that separates the two, and will they find their way back together, and how will this all work out, and will they start to realize that what they're doing is kind of shit?
Yeah, that's interesting, because you know what? This girl at work told me this the other day. There's actually companies that will do something called, it's either honey potting or honey something, honeying. It basically, if you want to check and see if your partner is cheating on you, you can go to companies, and there's ones in Perth.
What?
Yeah, you can go there.
No,
you can look it up. The term is not honey potting, but it sounds like honey potting. I can't remember it. Sorry.
What?
Yeah.
No. Give you the proper version.
Thank you very much. And you go there and you say, listen, I want to check and see if my person is cheating on me. And let's face it, it's going to be guys. It's going to be women going about guys, or guys going about guys. But the guy is the guy getting cheated on, doing the cheating, right? So they then concoct situations where they put plants in a bar, like girls in a bar, who go up and try and fuck the dude, right? And they say, at no stage do we allow them to have sex. But
oh,
we will.
Okay, then.
Yeah, I know. We'll film it. We'll have people in there. We'll have all this sort of shit. And they can do that shit. So I'm saying, I know. It's fucked up. It's real fucked up. So that shit is real, everyone, just so you know. But nice movie pick.
I'm not sure how we got
there. It's apparently kind of real.
It's a very, very good film. Check it out.
Wow.
And I know Sam from and Stacey from Movie Reviews and 20Q's podcast have interviewed one of the directors and stars of the film.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so that's worth checking out too if you haven't listened to it already.
Nice one.
Yeah, it's, you know, Jermaine Clement and whatever else.
I forgot. Mm. Cool. All right. My number four is also a really under the wire movie, and someone did mention it on the listener community. It might have been Chris. I'm sorry if it's not. The movie is called, this is odd, The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot.
Yeah, okay. Sam Elliott, right?
Sam Elliott.
I haven't seen it. Didn't know it was
anything. I just stumbled across this movie and I went, what? So basically, the movie is about Sam Elliott, who is now an old man, but it flashes back to when he actually was in the war and killed Hitler. He was basically like an operative who did that, right? And
so they show that scene. He wasn't blown up in his bunker or whatever else.
No, the way the way the movie plays it is that actually, no, the reality, it's not an alternate reality. He's saying that he actually killed the real Hitler, but the Germans had lots of like...
They covered it up.
They covered it up. Okay. So, yeah. And then what happens is, seemingly unrelatedly, the government comes to him now that he's an old man and says, listen, we've got this Bigfoot problem in Canada, and it's carrying a virus that is killing all of the wildlife and will eventually kill mankind.
What?
Yeah. He says, you are actually we tested your blood. You happen to be like immune to it. So we want you to go kill Bigfoot. And he goes and they have this armory. He picks up like that rifle, that scope, this knife, that's it. Right? And he walks out. And it's an interesting movie. It's a little, I wouldn't say it's perfect. Like it's a tad clumsily filmed from time to time. But Sam Elliott is really cool in it. And it made me...
Well, that's not hard to believe.
No, he's cool as shit, man. And like, it lags a little behind too many flashbacks. It's a little bit like flashback, flash sideways a little bit. But it made me meditate on old age. And it certainly is a very different film.
I'm intrigued. Film. Yeah, I will say this one.
Yeah, I think the thing that it achieves is that it takes a sort of ridiculous concept and an even more ridiculous title and then goes a long way towards legitimizing it in a way that you can take seriously. So it's an interesting choice. My number four, The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot.
Okay, very nice. Well, I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
All right, well, my number three is a film which I initially watched and was blown away by certain elements of the film, especially the early parts of it. And then I thought the second half of the film kind of got away from me, but it stuck with me. And
really,
I was so impressed by the way this film was shot that I kind of have to give this huge recommend, and it's one of the best films I've seen this year overall.
Holy shit.
However, it is really hard to watch, and at times it's really badly acted. So it's one of those films where I think the best parts of it outweigh the shitty parts, but right. If you came to me and said I couldn't watch it, dude, or I couldn't get on board because the acting's so shit, I would say fair enough.
All right.
Does that make sense?
Yes,
so
kind of.
The good parts outweighed that side of it. So this is a film, it's a French film from a director named Gaspar Noé.
Okay.
Who's actually Argentinian born, I think.
All right.
But he works out of Paris. And he has made a career out of making controversial films. That's his shtick. In fact, the poster, one of the posters for the films is this. You despised I Stand Alone. You hated Irreversible. You loathed Enter the Void. You cursed Love. Now try Climax.
What the hell? It's daring you to shit on this movie as long as you pay for
it? And the very bottom of it is him holding up like a drink. Toasting you like, fuck you!
What?
Yeah.
Wait, did he do Irreversible? Is that the Monica Bellucci one?
Yeah, it is the Monica Bellucci one where she gets raped. And it's all the swirling camera work. And this is not unlike that film in that there are lots of long one takes. This man is a visionary when it comes to blocking a shot and having people move through it. Now, it's a film effectively, apparently based on a real story of a French... there's a few other characters. There's a German characters, a couple of British characters, maybe an American or two.
Yeah.
But it's effectively, they're mostly speaking French because it's set in France. And they're a dance troupe. And they're putting together this big, huge dance thing that they're going to do through France and then the US. And they do their first major rehearsal, which goes really well. And then they have an after party. And somebody spikes a sangria with LSD.
Whoa.
And everything goes to hell in a handbasket. Almost metaphorically and literally. Because he deliberately tries to give you the sense that we have gone into hell in the second half of the film.
Wow, really?
So that's probably all the setup I need, except to say this. It opens, and he has a sort of signature style. It opens with an overhead shot of a woman stumbling through snow who's bloodied and falls over.
Is this hard to watch?
Sorry?
Is this hard to watch?
Yeah, in element. There's some moments, but it's not as bad as the poster's trying to make it sound out. It's not like we have graphic gore over and over again. Not at all.
Okay.
All right. A few people die, but not a lot of people die, put it that way. But there are some really uncomfortable sexual violence scenes and all the rest of it, because people basically are completely disinhibited in doing... They descend into chaos. Right?
Wow.
There's that bit I just talked about. Then there's about 10 minutes, and I got really bored, although it all pays off later, of because set in 1994, talking heads talking through their interviews, and there's 20 of them, give or take.
Yeah.
Like, why they're going to be, like, their interview process of why they should be employed by the dance troupe, and you get to learn a little bit about each one of these characters.
Yeah.
There's one paid one professional actor in the whole film. That's Sophia Boutella from, like, Kingsman with the legs.
Oh, hell yeah, yeah, yeah. Hell yeah.
And what else she been? Star Trek Beyond.
That's right.
The rest are all dancers, first and foremost. And dear God, you can tell. Because A, they're not great actors. But B, they are phenomenal dancers.
Yeah.
And after you get through the nodding heads or the talking heads on the VHS video screen, which has, by the way, it's all framed so you can see video covers around it, which are Homer, it's telling you all the films going to homage in all these films around, and books.
Oh, okay. All right. Yep. That's a bit interesting.
Like, including like Nietzsche. And,
Nietzsche, yeah.
Yep, Nietzsche. Yep. Sorry, my bad.
Right.
And then we get a, I swear to God, 12-minute shot where the camera goes into and through and above and around this dance routine, which is about 6 minutes long. And then instead of cutting at the end of that, he just keeps it running for the next 6 minutes of them all talking about how the dance routine went. It is phenomenal.
That's one shot.
Yeah,
directly. With non-actors.
Yep.
That would have taken 2 years.
Later on, there's shots that are equally as long once things go to hell in a handbasket, he's tracking down corridors, and then the camera flips on its head and it's showing things upside down for
about... Could you detect any cuts?
Not obvious ones. So it's not like,
so it's presented like one shot, not which like is fine with me.
I'm sure they are in there. I'm absolutely sure they're in there, but it's not as blatant as the Birdman cuts.
Very impressive. Sounds like a technical triumph.
Technically, this film is phenomenal. It's an experience. Thematically, it's really simple. It's badly acted at times. There's about a 20-minute section after this opening 12-minute shot where it's really badly edited. Like, even throws in frames of black between the cuts, and I don't know why. That just really threw me. So I loved it and I hated it, but overall, it's a memorable film. I couldn't get it out of my head. That's why it's my number 3.
Tell me again, the title?
Climax.
Climax. All right, shit. Well, my number 3 is a movie that I thought I had saw, but never did.
Okay.
This movie is Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. Now, this is George Clooney's
directorial debut. Sam Rockwell?
Sam Rockwell. Yeah. Now, I thought that I had seen it because what I actually saw was a movie called Failsafe, which was George Clooney doing a TV show that was live back in the day, right? But this is Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, where it's about the television...
Did George Clooney do Good Night, Good Luck?
Yeah, he did that after this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Or maybe that was... No? Anyway, whatever. It was around that time. Game show producer Chuck Barris is at the height of his career, played by Sam Rockwell. He creates like shows called The Dating Game and stuff like that, and The Gong Show. But basically, this movie is suggesting that he was actually a CIA agent. And the actual real Chuck Barris actually says that I was this guy and that I killed 33 people. So the show is actually about, it's got like Julia Roberts and shit like that in here and stuff like that, and George Clooney himself and stuff like that. But I was really impressed with just, this is, I think, this would have been one of the first times anyone had heard of Sam Rockwell.
What year is it?
2002.
Okay.
So it's early on. But his whole fucking shtick, this whole, like, he's really acting his balls off in this movie. And he's really killing this whole idea that he's this, you know, game show guy who's nuts, but also is somehow cold right when he needs to be. Very cool. There's an end bit which involves poison, which is very cool. Most of you have probably seen this already, but I just adore the shit out of this movie.
I haven't.
You see it?
Mm-mm.
Oh, dude, you should totally see it. You should totally see it.
Okay.
It's like, it's nicely shot, too. It's like beautiful. It's nice to watch. Not beautiful, nice to watch.
All right.
Which is good, yeah. Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. Give it a look. G. Clune is the bomb. You know I love me some G. Clune.
You do.
All right.
My number 2 is a film I watched late last year. Just missed out on my top 10 of the year. It's called Assassination Nation.
Oh, what have I heard about this movie?
Yeah, it's directed by a guy named Sam Levinson, and it basically follows high school senior Lily and her group of friends, and it's all about the influence of social media, and Lily is basically sleeping with an adult.
Okay.
And someone in the town starts hacking everybody's private information on their phones, on their computers, and distributing it to everybody else. And from there, how the entire town descends into chaos. So once all the secrets are exposed in people's lives, how everybody reacts, both savagely in terms of defending themselves, but also in fear out of my secrets being exposed next. So it's like this warning shot about the internet. It's all about the social media craze and how much stuff we put out there. So it's a warning about all that. But it's also this really stylized, really well put together come action film towards the end.
Assassination Nation, it's called.
So eventually these girls have to start defending themselves, and they have, because they're going to be murdered.
Oh my god, it's that bad.
Yeah,
guess the point like
where,
that.
Guess the point where people are literally, you know, dragged out because they're looking for whoever is the hacker to kill them, and they think it's her through a series of events in the film, and they have to defend themselves. And there's this incredible one shot again to talk about that.
Yeah.
About 2/3 of the way through the film to kick off the last act, which is just phenomenal. And I want to say anything more than that. This film is well recommended. Most people who saw it really enjoyed it, but I think a lot of people didn't see it. So
recent film?
Yeah, end of last year. It came out sort of September last year.
Oh, Assassination Nation. I'm going to add that to the list. That sounds cool.
Absolutely check it
Once
out.
Once you tell me it looks cool, I'm more interested.
Looks great. It's also kind of cool in a way that it has a transsexual character without being overly worried about that.
That's how you should play that. Just that's a thing. Exactly how you should play that.
She is one of the members of the group.
An element of the... Yeah, exactly.
And that's it. We don't have to keep drawing attention to it over and over again, which I found was really refreshing. So
yes, good. Absolutely.
Though, of course, it does come into play later on.
That's fine.
When
it's an aspect of the character.
Not her issue, but the people around the issue. Like, most people don't have an issue, but those that do target her for that.
Okay. So, yeah, that's fine. Works for the story. All right. Well, my number two, again, a movie I missed for a long time and only saw this 2 days ago, Fury.
Yeah, good film.
Really good film. Now, this is it's a war story, everyone. April 1945, the Allies are making their push into the European, you know, front or whatever. And then Brad Pitt, being a battle-hardened army sergeant dude, he's leading this tank crew, which has, like, you know, the Punisher in it and, like, Shia LaBeouf and, like, some other dude. And just, it's oh, and what's his name? Michael Peña.
Mm-hmm.
And they go basically behind enemy lines, and it's about them being attacked and just being outnumbered and outgunned. And I didn't know Americans didn't have the best tanks back in that time. Apparently the Germans had better technology. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing. When have the Americans not had the best fucking weapons? It's weird. So
1943 apparently or 44.
That's when, exactly. Yeah. It's nothing more than basically these guys, you know, their bond and that kind of thing. It's a war story, but it nicely moves along. And it's shot by David Ayer.
Mm-hmm.
And he does, he has a way of filming violence that's both intense and matter of fact. So it's actually kind of good to watch. Like, it keeps it punching along. There's a lot of tracer bullets that were fired in World War II, which I did not know about. It looked very cool. But I will tell you one thing, right? It's a good film because it's well made, but I seem to be having a problem with how cunty the American soldiers were, because when they went into the house, are they fucking rapists? Is that what they're talking about?
Well, they're heavily implying that invaders do that. They're not trying to whitewash this as, bad choice words maybe, but that all the Allies were good and all the Allies and all the, you know, the German soldiers were bad.
I had a problem. Like, I was sitting there going, so what? I'm supposed to root for these guys now?
It's meant to be complicated.
Fuck, I was sitting there going, damn it, I need to work so this doesn't ruin the show for me. Like, do you know what I mean?
Look, maybe I'm segueing a little bit, I won't stick on this too much, but my grandmother died a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, sorry to hear.
Yeah, and she was a nurse in World War II.
Mm.
She worked for the Red Cross. And
really?
She was on Red Cross trains, and she copped...
Poland?
Sorry?
Poland?
In Germany.
Germany, okay, yep.
She was German.
Oh, she's German, okay, sorry.
Yeah. And she copped a bullet from an Allied fighter strafing a Red Cross train.
Wow, really?
But as my dad said, which they were told to do because the Germans were smart enough to go, well, if we put Red Cross symbols on top of the train, we can move what we need to move. So it's both sides were doing what they needed to do to win the war.
That's just fucking wrong. I know exactly. War. We don't mean a war. Wow, that's quite a story.
Mm.
God damn. All right. So yes, I would say that this is less an epic movie, but it's like a series of tense and focused episodes. So I wouldn't say this is an epic film or anything, but it's just a great watch.
No, it's good. It's a good film.
So, yeah.
I thoroughly recommend it. Well done there, sir. All right. Well, that is we won't go back through the 10 through. It's not like we're comparing with the rest of it. My number one then, to wrap it all up, is from the IMDb top 250.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a film I expected to enjoy. I was thoroughly like, whatever. Just stuck it on a plane flight from the North Island of Japan back down to Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Intouchables. It's from 2011.
Yeah,
it's been remade, which I had no idea because I've never seen it anywhere, with Kevin Hart and Bryan Cranston. But it's a French film.
I didn't know that.
Directed by Eric Toledano and Olivia Nakache. And it stars people who I've never heard of before, but Francoise Cluzet and Omar Sy.
What's it about?
It's basically about a guy who's a paraplegic from the neck down. And he is never explained. Oh, no, it is explained how it happens eventually in the film. But it's never explained why he's got a lot of money, but he does. He has oodles of money. And he's hiring a assistant / nurse / physiotherapist who's going to look after his every need whenever he needs. He's going to live in the house with him and do all that. And this guy, this other guy, he's Sudanese born but French national.
Mm-hmm.
So he's come to France and he's a citizen there. and he's low class. He doesn't have a lot of money. He lives in a small apartment with his 17 siblings. Mm-hmm. I'm slightly exaggerating.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he's just applying for the job just to get the doll, effectively.
Okay.
Just to get the payment to say, I've ticked off my 3 jobs this week. Don't give it to me. Don't give a shit. Tick off this so I can get my money. Anyway, the paraplegic guy sees something in him. I want him. And he hires him. And it's a true story.
Mm.
And their friendship, their bond that they form through the course of this film is totally believable.
And it's in French, yeah, obviously.
It's all in French, yeah, yeah. The two actors are phenomenal. For a bloke who is playing a paraplegic who can't move from the neck down, he emotes so well with his face.
Really?
It's incredible.
He's won something, yeah?
He might have won Best Foreign Film at the Academy Awards. It is phenomenal. It's an excellent film. It's a feel-good film.
Is it?
I laughed out loud so many times on the plane that friends I was traveling with were like looking at me strangely.
That's huge, dude.
It's really funny at times. It's really heartwarming. And you really want this to go. How can it work out? Well, see the film and you'll see.
All right. Intouchables.
Yep.
I am surprised. I never would have touched this if you hadn't touched this. Huh? If you hadn't shown me. That's okay. Shit.
Phenomenal film. One of the best. It's probably in my top 100 films of all time.
Now. Whoa.
Down the bottom end of it. Yes.
Throw a score at it.
88.
Fuck. Okay, then. Obviously, you have to watch the damn thing now.
Yep.
All right. That's it. All right. My number one.
I probably have talked it up too much because you panic when you hear me say anything over a score of 80.
I do.
But
all right, I'll try and temper it.
I just had no expectations. So if you can temper yours going in that way.
Okay, I'll try that out. Okay, good. My number one, everyone, is All the Money in the World. That's that Christopher Plummer joint.
Oh,
which
really?
Was going to be a Kevin Spacey movie, but then they changed it out. You've seen it, right?
I'm surprised. This is so high.
Really? I loved it. Like, this is... Okay, everyone, it's based on a true story. It's about the first billionaire in the world, John Paul Getty. And it follows the kidnapping of his grandson and the desperate attempt by his mom, Michelle Williams, played by Michelle Williams, to convince the billionaire grandfather, Christopher Plummer, to pay a $17 million ransom.
In 1970...
70-something.
Something.
Yeah. Back in the day, right? So the weird thing about this movie is that the billionaire, like J. Paul Getty, refuses to pay the ransom, even though he genuinely loves his grandson and is fearful for his safety.
Because he kind of says, if I pay this one, I have to pay them all.
It's a bit more complex than that, because what it is, it shows how much more Getty valued his own principles about money and wealth. So making a good deal is way more important to him than actually getting his grandson back, which he still actually is really distressed about. And it's insane to watch, but it's also interesting. I mean, I was watching it halfway through and I was like, this is a long film, but geez, it's a good film. It's beautifully shot, beautifully acted, really, really interesting the whole way along. And I got to say this, Michelle Williams, brilliant.
As she often is.
As she often is. But you know what? Marky Mark, also brilliant. I actually was looking at it going, you know what? He actually is a real actor. I'm buying every single thing he's doing and I'm liking him enough to actually want him to win. So, I mean, it gets a little bit darker than I was expecting. And despite its 2-hour runtime, though, I gotta say I'm impressed as hell with the film. It's just interesting, engaging, and well shot all the way through. Ridley Scott is still good. We were afraid he'd departed, but he hasn't done that yet. Ooh. So I'm just saying, this is a great-ass movie. All the Money in the World is definitely worth your time. It's 2 hours and change, still worth your time, doesn't feel like a long movie. And that's when you can be a long movie, if your shit is interesting all the way through. So there you go.
All right, I'm surprised.
Oh,
I thought
like
it was fine.
Like it?
No. I thought it was fine. I would give this a 3-star. What are you giving it then? Well, I'd give it a 63, 64, somewhere in that range.
It's high 70s.
Okay. Yeah. So you didn't get any over 4 stars then, whereas I've got a couple of films that fall into that category.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got more to pick from. I was fucking scrambling like a bitch, man. So there you are.
All right, maybe we'll be better prepared for the next top 10.
I think so, yes.
All right, there we are. There is 20 films that we've recommended. No crossovers today. So 20 quick reviews. It's a longer episode than usual, but we will wrap up with what you had to say in our segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about Pop 10. Talk about Pop 10.
This week's Pop 10 kicks off with Ashley Gorski. She said, watch both Netflix and Hulu documentaries on the Fyre Festival. Yes, there's another one which focuses more on the guy, I can't remember his name.
Yeah, whatever his name is.
Yes, and they were both highly entertaining. Additionally, check out the series One Day at a Time on Netflix. It's a great series I highly recommend. I figure I can include it since you're the Countdown Movie and TV podcast.
Totally, absolutely.
Thank you for that, Ashley. David Power, top level patron to the show. Very, very good friend. Aquaman. By all means, turn your brain off at the door and you'll probably have fun, but by no means is this a good film. Okay. That's fair. I think that's a good description.
Yep.
Tim Cormack said The Cure had some good ideas for a zombie flick set in Ireland, shot on a shoestring.
Can I assume you've seen this already?
No, I haven't, but it's on Netflix. It's on my to-watch list. Speaking of horror films that I have actually seen, though, Philip Wilson said Hell House LLC. Found footage fun, solid creep factor, and it got me legitimately spooked. It is good.
It's good?
It's good for a low-budget horror film. It delivers the goods. I think that's a good
high praise from Paul, let me tell you.
Chris Yinney, the man who killed Hitler and then the Bigfoot.
There you go. It
shows
was Chris.
Superb Sam Elliott performance in what, in the hands of a lesser man, would have been silly. Could have used a larger budget, though, but definitely I recommend.
I do recommend it too, yeah, definitely.
Well, you did, given what it was on your list.
Mm-hmm.
From Julio, another patron to the show, new patron, thank you, Julio, and good friend from the Contrarians podcast. Do check them out. Very great show. Good English there.
Excellent.
Happy Death Day to you. You might like it if you thought the Lego movie was funny.
And I didn't. You didn't like it?
He says I didn't.
Oh, he didn't. Yeah, yes. Okay.
Mike Seibert, of course.
MSI.
Good friend to the show. We just watched Best Picture winner Green Book. Regardless of the backlash and controversy, it's a totally fine odd couple road trip movie. Pretty funny too. My wife and I really enjoyed it, along with the other old white people in our screening. Thank you for that, Mike. And of course, we are talking about this on the coming week's feature review, Green Book. Do check it out in a few days' time.
Will do.
Gerald Morris, congratulations, Gerald, on your new addition, new boy to the family. Just had his third child.
Wow.
Well, they just had their third child. Anna and the Apocalypse, the film I spoke about, 4.5 stars from Gerald. I loved it. Whoa. Songs were great, and it was what if High School Musical faced a zombie apocalypse. Only thing missing was Zac Efron in gym shorts.
Well, that's the only thing missing every time.
For Wayne.
It's always missing.
Moonstack said The Infinite Man, really cool Australian time travel movie. What? It's on the SBS website. I'd highly recommend it.
Say again?
The Infinite Man.
The Infinite Man. All right.
From Angry Man at Retro Cinema Podcast, of course, good friends to the show, the original Blade Runner, because it's the greatest film of all time. I stand resolute, motherfucker!
Tis a good flick. Paul's not the same fan.
Yeah, I'm not. I came to it too late. Blake Jarvis had Paddleton, the new Netflix release.
Yeah,
an
what?
Intimate look at a unique friendship which involves a daily routine of kung fu movies, burnt pizza, and a made-up sport called Paddleton, and how this is affected after one is diagnosed with cancer.
Oh, tough watch.
Daniel Dale, I recently watched two movies that I've heard about on this podcast, Hell or High Water and Wind River. I loved both.
Yeah, man.
Made me a huge fan of Taylor Sheridan.
Yeah, same director. Nice.
Last couple to round out this week's Pop 10 from Dan on Netflix and Spill Podcast. Good friends of the show. The Autopsy of Jane Doe. IFC Midnight doesn't strike again and actually has a decent horror movie on its hands for once. So they are big detractors of IFC Midnight films.
And, yeah, the whole studio.
But this is a good film. I've seen it as well. I really thought the creep factor was great for the first two thirds.
The Autopsy of
Jane Doe.
Okay.
And lastly, from Colby Mack, not your average WWE movie. Fighting with the Family, he gives an 8 out of 10, freshly written, with great dialogue, strong acting performances, and gives you all the nostalgia feels if you grew up as a wrestling
WWE
fan.
Movie, all right.
Yeah, there we are. Thank you so much to everyone who gets back to us. Sorry we couldn't get through all of your feedback.
Thanks, guys.
Really, truly do appreciate it. And if you want to write in for future shows, topics, how can they do so, Wayne?
They can search for us on Facebook or on Google, whatever, but they can also email us on thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at thecountdownpc, and as Wayne says, we are a Facebook listener community. The link is in the show notes. All right, that is it for this week's episode. It's been a blast. It's a bit of a longer one. We covered 20 films
today.
Yeah,
sorry about that if it was too long, guys.
That's all right. For 20 films, hopefully we've given you some to avoid and some that you can check out and let us know how you go with both. Wayne, what are we doing next week for episode 206 on The Countdown?
The topic is our top 10 what the fuck movies, right? Where we had moments in a movie where we went,
moments
what
in a movie?
The
That's right.
fuck?
Yeah, top 10 what the fuck moments.
What the fuck moments in movies,
in
yes.
movies. So things that really blew our mind for whatever reason. Could be good, could be bad. The topic is very, very broad.
Broad as.
A lot of fun on that. So we'll hear your feedback as well for next week's show. That is it for today's episode of the Countdown
Word.
Movie and TV Reviews Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
Suck it.
You can't handle the truth.
Eh.
On that prophetic, impactful note, we'll catch you next week. In 3, 2.
Wrong one.
Not spoilers. There are no spoilers. Let's try that again. 3.